Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host this evening, Jesse Billington, and we're back to preview the eighth round of the 2025 Formula One season, the Monaco Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined by Mr. Timo Albers Daly. How are you?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to this weekend a lot. We've got Monaco, we've got Indy 500, both being up pretty nicely for very, very different reasons, but I'm looking forward to it. We've got two good races coming up. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm also looking forward to this weekend. I think it's just going to be one of those sort of golden weekends where just sort of there's plenty to take in as a motorsports fan. We mentioned obviously Indy 500, also Coca-Cola 600 is this weekend, is it?
Yes, it is. And I was asked whether or not it would be too late for me to watch that. And I said, normally I wouldn't, but also depending on how much adrenaline is running through my system at that point after the Monaco Grand Prix and the Indy 500, I may not have a choice but to watch that as well, especially if Kyle Larson is able to do the double there.
Yeah, if Kyle can pull off the double, that would be a very, very impressive thing indeed. So, yeah, there's a lot to look forward to when it comes to
motion. Over 1,000 miles, just about, if he manages to pull all that in. So not too shabby going for a day's work.
Yeah, a hell of a lot of driving. But has anyone done the double before?
I want to say yes, but I don't have the notes at hand to tell you who. I don't think it's a long list, if it exists.
Double duty, the Indy Charlotte double, Memorial Day double. Five drivers have attempted the feat. John Andretti, May 29th, 1994. Tony Stewart became the first and only driver to date to complete all 11,000 miles.
11,000?
1,100 even. Well, that's 100, sorry. He's really going. Robbie Gordon has...
drove too much.
Yeah, Robbie Gordon has tried five times. Tony Stewart has tried two times. Kurt Busch and Kyle Larson one time apiece. No driver, however, has won either race while attempting this.
I was pretty sure neither had managed to win one, never mind both of them, on the same attempt. So,
yeah.
I mean, we'd love to see it, but...
Yeah, Stewart's 2001 effort stands as the best combined result, a sixth at Indy and a third at Charlotte. So it's doable. You can have a good result, but relies on...
Oh, it's doable, but it just ain't going to happen very easily.
Yeah, it takes a hell of a lot. So it'll be very interesting. Like the logistics of it all are absolutely fantastic, and like the fast recovery off of the back of Indy to go and do the NASCAR. The driver's taken on like IV fluids on the plane. They're checked out by a physician all in flight from one to the next. It is a properly.
It should also be pointed out that Larson is under contract to not miss the Coca-Cola 600 this year after he skipped it last year. So if IndyCar is delayed for whatever reason, then
he just has to pull in.
He's going to have to. Someone's going to just stuff him in a duffel bag and take him to the airport, whether he wants to go or not.
Yeah, it's not a case of he skipped it. He didn't get to do it because obviously Larson finished 18th last year, a bit of a rain delayed race,
19th, yeah.
And then failed to make it to the start of the race in Charlotte. So
was mainly due to the weather at Indy. So it was delayed by 4 hours, which did have a slight impact.
Yeah, so there's plenty to consider. But anyway, we've already got a little bit off track, so we'll dive straight into the news, which keeps us sort of a nice tangential way back into things, because of course this year's Indy 500 is a complete sellout in a good sense. It's not sort of sold out commercially, but it's sold out capacity-wise. All the tickets have sold. This is the first time since the 2015 centenary celebration that the event has completely sold out. It's estimated that there'll be 350,000 people in attendance, either as punters, guests, working. This works out that one in every 1,100 people at the United States will be at the 500, which is a mind-boggling statistic when you take into account how big the United States is, and one in every 1,100 people will be at the 500. Last year's...
I was about to say, we probably know someone who's going to be there. And then I realized I know two people who are going to be there, but that's literally because I do a podcast with one of them. So that was a bit easy for me on that one. But you might have to think about that slightly more difficultly. But the odds are with you at least this time. It's more likely this year than not.
I might know someone. I'd have to check. But yeah, last year's Coca-Cola 600 was also a sellout with 95,000 people spectating, plus obviously works on top of that. Bit more context just so you can understand the numbers. Le Mans last year saw 329,000 people attending before you include those racing and working. And Silverstone across the weekend for the Grand Prix last year saw 480,000 punters alone through the gate. So these are some big motorsport events and obviously great time to be in motorsport. We're getting all these fans in. It's growing and everyone's enjoying what they're seeing.
You love to see it. It's great for the sport, like you say, and it is set up to be one heck of a show. I did a podcast this week over on the Cubs Indy Channel with my co-host Nate, and we talked about all of the practice and qualifying sessions and all of the action that's been going on there, the storylines that are in play for Sunday. It just looks to be one heck of a show, as I mentioned there. So, yeah, I'm not expecting a disappointing Monaco by any stretch of imagination, because I'm really disappointed by Monaco anyway. I'm bulletproof with Monaco on that front, but indeed looks like it's going to deliver in one way or another. It's kind of set up in a way that even if it's wreck after wreck after wreck, you're still going to get something interesting happening there. And it's kind of nice when it's going to take something truly, truly bizarre to happen for it to not be entertaining.
Yeah, I think... I don't even think like a lights to flag 500 would be dull, because it's one of those races.
Well, no, because it would be fitting in with this kind of a weird thing that we've had this season of we've had more green flag racing than ever before in the history of the sport. So as unlikely as I see that being, it would also be really on brand and very odd.
There's a lot of interesting storylines leading into this. We've got a rookie on pole with a team that's never raced an IndyCar before. We've got Takuma Sato, a two-time winner, 48 years old, on the front row alongside him. We've got the guy who's come second all too many times sat alongside them still. And another great storyline is that Penske is falling apart. They made a legal modification.
A little bit.
They made legal modifications to the attenuators at the rear of their car because the glue looked bad. This is the excuse that they have officially filed. It didn't look nice. And the result is that Tim Sindrick, the team president, Ron Rozewski, the managing director, and Kyle Moyer, the general manager, have all stepped down from the organization. So that's three big names from within the team that have just gone, better clear off from this one.
Tim Sindrick, the man, by the way, who was also kindly asked to leave NASCAR a little while ago for grey area reasons, and his son is racing in NASCAR at the moment, has been for a little while, and you got to think that's going to be a fun dinner conversation to be having at some point in the not too distant future. How was your day? We're not going to talk about it. How was yours? I don't want to talk about it. Okay, never mind. We're going to move swiftly on.
But recognise the Sindrick name there.
More importantly, out of everything that's going to happen in Indianapolis and maybe in America this weekend, the biggest event by far is the six Wienermobiles that will be racing each other on Friday around the Bank Oval in the first Weenie 500.
I was hoping you were going to mention the Oscar Mayer Weenie 500 because it looks so good. Like, obviously, they saw what F1 did with the Lego F1 cars and went, you know what? We can step that up.
Every true piece of art has its cheap copy, and the Lego cars, I'm afraid, were the cheap copy in this instance, because you can't beat the Weenie cars.
You can't beat them. They're so iconic. And
a sentence I thought I'd say this week. Never mind ever.
Someone's going to clip this badly, and it's just going to be you saying, I love Weenie.
And you now.
Yeah, unfortunately, I had to sew myself into that sack to try and get it there. But
there's another one.
Yeah, it's... I think we should see more of this goofy racing parade lap stuff, because it is lighthearted. It brings in fans from across the world. It shows that even the most technical and rule-abiding of sports has a fun and upbeat side. I'd love to see something equally sort of stupid for Le Mans. Like
I have the thing for you. It's not at Le Mans, but we could start a petition. A couple of years ago now, I think it was, at the end of the kind of first international championship of Nitrocross, there was a support race purely for the final round, where think of like your van people carrier sort of cars. They went racing on those on stuff that you'd do World RX on. And with no modifications whatsoever.
Similar to what they did, like people carrier racing, but
Yes, essentially. And it was a mixture of drivers and fans, and they got Andrew Curley, the lead commentator, to go in and have a go as well, and his was stuck in first gear for all 8 laps. And he was going for quite a while, and obviously he's there going over this little jump and going, and the entire car just kind of shattering in various pieces. It was brilliant fun. So I'm hoping this kind of carries on in the same vein. This is what we want from American racing.
I think that for Le Mans, they should do, on the run-up to it, they should have like a 3-lap race maybe where everyone has to run in a Citroën 2CV. Sort of like iconic car of France, incredibly slow, very wallowy handling. And obviously you have to do like a driver change. So you get 3 laps to obviously cycle through your drivers on your team. And just like as a great...
I'm thinking it's a combination between the chase from For Your Eyes Only and Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning. It's just some mesh of those, and it's just an absolute free-for-all.
You're exactly getting my idea, because especially, can you imagine going through like the Porsche curves with a Citroën 2CV that's just sort of leaning?
I was more thinking about the long straight and just seeing how long it takes them just sitting there going...
quite a while. I've had a 2CV up to 78 miles an hour before, and it was sort of all out of ideas at that point. So it's going to take a while going down the back straight. And also, but then again, if you're only going 78, you're not really going to be overstressing the brakes on the turn into Arnage, are you, at the far end of the straight?
It's not flat.
It's not a big braking zone, really, is it, for something that's only going 70? But anyway.
Either that or just a slight turn and just barrel roll.
Yeah, it'll just go end over end over end into the gravel. There's so many interesting ways this could go horribly wrong, but I think it'd be fun to see.
Our next point of news for today.
Partnerships. Disney is partnering with Formula One in 2026. Unclear what this is going to do, mind you. Is Mickey going to drive in an FP1 session? Are they reopening the Walt Disney World Speedway in Florida? Is it going to be a return to the Mick Yard? And for anyone who's genuinely sort of questioning what I'm on about here, yes, Disney World did used to have in Florida a tri-oval, and it was called the Mick Yard. And they used to race there until, I think, 2011, 2015 sometime. And, there used to be a Disney lake to the NASCAR series. But I don't know.
I think I speak for everyone. No, I was going to specify for them. I was going to say everyone there when we all saw that news and collectively just went, what the fuck?
Yeah, I don't know what the end point is with this, but I did see that Romain Grosjean had got to meet Mickey Mouse and unveil the sort of Disney liveried Formula One mock-up. So I was like, okay.
That feels like a Make-A-Wish thing. We should really check and see how he's doing.
He's having a great...
If he suddenly passes away, I think we know what happened there.
Oh, no, hang on. I've just realised something. So, 2026, we have a new team on the grid.
Romain Grosjean makes me think more of a goofy kind of character anyway. He should have met him. Similar vibes.
Yeah, no, that's not what I'm thinking about. What I'm thinking about is 2026, new team on the grid in the form of Cadillac. Obviously, we need drivers for that team. Not Mickey Mouse. But remind me, who previously has had sponsorship contracts with Disney?
I'd still rather not, though.
Sergio Perez.
Still rather not.
I'm just
putting... That would be such a boring thing to do, though. How transparent was it already that it was going to be purely on money? And then we go, oh, you know what? Let's make it about more money and just bore the hits off everyone by creating Sergio Perez again. Give it to someone proper.
But the Nestle Disney Cadillac Andretti?
I couldn't care less.
Look,
it would be the most boring use of an 11th team. I'd go, you know what? Pick him out again. Yeah. No, it'd be the dullest thing. One of the dullest things.
We don't know what the House of Mouse is up to. We'll wait and see what they do. One other interesting thing that I did stumble across, actually, was that at the Miami Grand Prix, obviously Lego had a big presence there with the cars. One of the other things they were doing was filming like a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, like how to do tyre changes, how to put tyres onto cars. Obviously, Lego is the world's largest tyre producer. It's one of those fun facts. So I've sort of got this question of what's happening next, and I've done a little bit of digging, and there are rumours that obviously later this year we get the F1 movie. There is now rumours that there will be a Lego F1 movie somewhere down the line, which...
Probably would be better than Drive to Survive.
Yeah. The bar is low when it comes to Formula One media of recent.
Which, I don't know if you saw, somehow won an Emmy. but documentary.
Yeah, it doesn't really do much that is new. But anyway, yeah. So yeah, that's also something that's possibly on the horizon. Anyway, moving a bit closer to the present day, and we'll kick off with McLaren, who are running a special livery for the Monaco round of the Formula One Championship. And it's basically some white roundels.
I'm glad you had similar notes to me here, because I was looking at that going, what is actually different about it? And aside from the numbers, not much at all, really.
No, they've said that
they're nice numbers.
They're nice numbers, very nice numbers, but apparently it's supposed to be a throwback to the M7A, which is one of the very early Formula One cars, which was an orange car with white roundels for the numbers. The 7A was raced by Bruce McLaren and Denny Hulme. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's hardly special or bucking the trend. I do have questions about what Ferrari are going to be up to. They've got special race suits coming into this weekend. They're going back to white and blue, which is... I still hope they're going to do like a full not liveried car, because that would be quite nice. But my wish when it comes to liveries never comes true, and we're always disappointed. So I wait to be disappointed once more.
Yeah, not really much to add on that one. It's very rare that we get a one-off livery that A, looks good, B, is what we want it to be, and C, actually proves to be of any good luck. And we've already got that once this season, so I don't think we're going to get that again anytime soon.
Yeah, it's...
For reference, Max Verstappen and was Yuki Tsunoda at that point, Red Bull in Japan. Mm. Only works for Max, mind you.
Well, I mean, if we're calling the McLaren a special livery, by that margin, Red Bull also ran a special livery last weekend, by which I mean they had a white border around the outside of the numbers on the cars like they did when they first joined the series. So I don't know
what... I guess we can, but...
Yeah, maybe Red Bull can pull off the successful... special livery these days. I don't know. Speaking of Red Bull, however, my sister almost ran over Pepe Marti, the Formula 2 driver.
I have bone to pick with you on the accuracy of this, but continue.
She
wasn't technically her, so no. You're already misleading the listener.
But I am supplying them with the full, detailed information within the article. They just have to read it. She's been picked up to escape the principality before the race-induced lockdown, and her boss nearly ran over the F2 Campos driver. That's about it. That's pretty much all it extends to. She saw that he had a Red Bull t-shirt on, and Marty was written on it, so she just sort of Googled Red Bull Marty and then just sent me the Google result and said, I think I nearly ran this guy over earlier, or that boss did. So there you go. But one thing she has sent me, interestingly, was a picture of the Pirelli truck arriving in the Principality, and that leads us...
Is this your segue into tyres?
Yes, it is. I was trying to think of a way of doing it. I didn't have anything better. I don't know.
But just that.
The tyres are in Monaco, and crucially, we're running the C6, the C5, and the C4 compounds again. So softest three compounds, and this will be factored into the fact that this weekend we will be seeing double pit stops as Formula One enforces a two-stop strategy. The idea is that this will shuffle up the order a little. It will promote pace offsets that will result in overtakes. Not sure where around the incredibly narrow track we're expecting to see these.
There are places.
If you watch Formula 2, Formula 3, and Formula E, where the cars are significantly smaller, there are a few spots where you can get two cars side by side. Last year, the 78 lap...
Alpine know where not to do it.
Yes. So do technically the second Red Bull driver and both Haas's as well.
Well, I wouldn't blame Haas for that one.
Yeah, that was entirely on Perez. Although, if you are Mahavir Raghunathan, you do know an incredibly good overtaking place, and that simply cut the corner on the inside of turn one. But anyway, last year, 78 lap race, and the hard had an average use stint of 64.5 laps, the medium 50.4, the soft 28.0. So, yeah, basically everyone pitted very early on last year because of that red flag incident, and that was the pit stop done. So to try and completely counter that, we've gone the opposite way, enforced two-stop strategy, which will also prevail if it's a wet race as well. This is important to note, because even if it's wet and you swap between sort of dry to wet compounds, wet to dry compounds, you still have to make two pit stops. And according to the regulations, Article 30.5, paragraph M, which states that if a driver does not use intermediate or wet tyres in the race, they must use at least two different slick tyre compounds, of which one must be from the mandatory dry compounds, hard or medium. So you have to run either a hard or medium stint, and then the other two stints are up to you. So we could see drivers using all three compounds. We could see them doing a hard, medium, hard, medium, medium, hard, soft, vice versa, every other combination.
I think it would be quite funny if teams and drivers just pitted at the end of lap one, then again at the end of lap two, simply to mock the new system and just went from there. If they don't, much like IndyCar's new pit stop situation that they debuted at the Sunset Grand Prix and the Formula E interesting pit recharge gimmick, I don't think much of anything's going to change, or at least not as much as intended. And I think this idea would be a very funny way of circumnavigating all of these things that you've just lined out there.
Yeah, I mean, you make a very good point, and it's one that Bernie Collins has made sort of in sort of post-race after Imola. They were talking about things to come at the Monaco Grand Prix, and Bernie Collins said, yeah, I think as a strategist, the best thing you can possibly do for Monaco is qualify for a good track position and then get your pit stops immediately out of the way and run to the end on the hard tire, because it will do it around Monaco, because it's not a high damage tire, it's not a high energy circuit, you will do fine. And, I mean... because there's no... It would be funny, and because there's no mandated stint length, F1 have left
nothing
that
to stop them.
Happen. Yeah, there's nothing to stop them doing it, because they haven't said your stints must be X length and X length and X length and so on and so forth. No, they've just said you've just got to make two stops, three stints. There you go. So we'll see how it goes. You have a point, though.
A separate point, mainly to test you once again. It may be more obvious to you that McLaren obviously have the most wins around Monaco at 15, but I'm going to test you on the others. How many do Ferrari have? It's a quick fire round. We've got to go for it. We've got a few teams to get through here.
8.
10. What do Lotus and Red Bull have?
6.
7.
Oh, I'm getting closer.
BRM and Mercedes?
4. 5. Oh, God damn it. I'm always one out.
You've got one more chance. Senna. He's obviously got the most of any one driver. How many does he have?
5. 6. God damn it.
That's a 0.5 for Mr. Billington, which moves us into predictions quite nicely, where hopefully this trend continues.
I don't know. I think we've both got some very interesting predictions this week. And again, it all really relies on qualifying. So pole position, we'll kick off there. Ellie May has not put in any. So she's having a bit of a meze from last year's season, basically. Not a lot of points going on there.
No, she's succeeding the same much as you did by not writing anything. You wrote stuff down and you still got nothing.
Thank you for reminding me, Timo. Your pole position...
I'm only doing what she would be doing.
Yes.
Oscar Piastri.
I think he and Max Verstappen, since the second round of the season, have dominated all the wins and all the pole positions. So I think between the two of us, actually, because I predicted Max Verstappen for pole, we've gone for the bookie favourite, the statistic.
It's usually one or the other.
Yes, yeah. Mathematically, it's going to be one of those two. When it comes to the podium, though, we've gone slightly different routes.
I wanted to be a little bolded just because it's Monaco. I'm treating most of the season pretty sensibly, but I think here and Silverstone and maybe Monza, I'm going to be a little bit more liberal and mystic. And that's what I'm doing here, because I still do think that Oscar will convert his pole into a win. But then I think it's going to be a Ferrari lockout for the rest of the podium with Hamilton in second and Leclerc in third. You'd not complain.
I wouldn't complain. I think a Hamilton...
Even though you've got different predictions, you wouldn't complain.
I wouldn't complain, no. A Hamilton podium on his first outing in Monaco with Ferrari would be really nice. I think it'd be an exciting one to see. Yeah, I can't complain. Meanwhile, my podium looks a little different. I've gone for a Piastri win as well. I think that there's a little spark there that's going on. I think it's going to be an interesting one. Verstappen, for me, is coming home second place. And Kimi Antonelli is going to be third. I think he's going to have a bit of a turnaround of form from last weekend. He's had the mechanical problems. The car's been gone over. It's going to be sound. And he's going to be trying to make up for lost time. So I think he's going to have a very interesting weekend. Yeah. I think that's all I want to say on that. I don't want to jeopardise myself by saying anything else.
I'd say probably the less said better in some instances. We had this with IndyCar trying to make some predictions. Even though we don't usually do predictions for the 500, we fell into the trap, and now I'm worried for the drivers that I've been naming.
Yeah, it's sometimes a dangerous realm to sort of start making those predictions. Commentators cursed and that sort of thing. Or I don't know if there's like a podcaster's version of that.
Well, we are technically commentating on what we think will happen, so I still think it counts.
Close enough. We know Harry Benjamin. He is a commentator, so by proxy, it's there. Fastest lap.
It's giving Lando Norris something to do.
I mean, it might happen.
One in 19 chance it's not going to be Stroll. It's not.
Yeah. I think we can rule out quite a few drivers. It's not going to be either of the...
But there's small chances that it definitely won't happen. But with Stroll, it's just not going to happen. So that's why I still say a 1 in 19 chance.
He got into Q3 last weekend. Let's not rule this guy out.
Yeah, qualifying, not fastest lap.
Ah, but qualifying...
And also still not first.
Qualifying is about pace over a lap. Anyway, for me, fastest lap...
You get the fastest lap, isn't it?
No. For me, fastest lap is Max Verstappen. I think it's going to be an interesting one. He's going to sort of set... It's going to be another one of those weird ones that's set mid-brace, like just after he makes the stop for like soft tyres for the third stint or whatever. And that's when it's going to come, or it's going to be wet all through the race. And he's going to be the first person to make a swap to dries. It's going to work.
Are you pretty much verbatim making your exact same reasoning for first lap you did last week for Imola? It sounds eerily familiar and recent.
Yes. And did it work in Imola?
No, because you predicted, but not for the reasons that you said.
The reasons aren't the point. Still got.
Then why are you bothering with them?
Because the podcast's got to be a reasonable length of time, Timo. We've only been talking.
No, it doesn't.
Wild prediction. Yours. Which is very wild.
And Lawson score points.
Yeah, Bortoletto and Lawson. I think it would have been fine if Bortoletto, but...
Yeah, but it says wild prediction. So I went wild. Arm straight up in the air, dancing side by side, kind of wild.
It's crazy, man. Meanwhile, I'm going to go wild prediction. I'm going to go Albon another top five because
that pressure kid.
There'd be three in the season and two in a row, which would be a really strong performance from him and really strong for that Williams. Again, it's one of those things that if they qualify,
this is where Sainz gets in fifth.
Yeah, this is the other Williams gets it or something ridiculous. We'll wait and see. But yeah, there we go. Those are our predictions for the Monaco Grand Prix. You've obviously had some fun facts and tyre talk, and obviously a brief recap of the news that has happened since we last spoke on Monday evening. That's all for this episode of the Undercut Podcast. We'll be back next week for a review of the Monaco Grand Prix. We will be working on a bank holiday Monday to record that evening. In the meantime, though, Timo, any more from you?
You want to find me this week? I have a series of articles coming out. One, Is It Fast? Covering Team Brazil. We had an interview with one of the drivers, Wallace Martins, out today, and we had an overview article out on Monday on the Team Brazil scholarship itself. And if you want something a bit more F1 related, I've written an article, which maybe you could do with reading as well, and anyone else who doubts Monaco is the place that it is and why it deserves to be treated a much, much nicer than a lot of people give it credit for. Because I have an article written on why Monaco is the jewel in the crown, and that's about the one we've had a Monaco.
Very nice indeed. Ping me the links to those. I'll certainly get them. I'll try and get the Monaco one included in the description for this so people won't miss it and can definitely go and enjoy
it. Monaco related.
Yeah, it's worth including. Otherwise, if you want more from me, obviously pick up the latest edition of Classic Car Weekly or listen to the Classic Car Weekly podcast. I'm all over that, as well as all over social media at Jesse on Cars on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. I'm trying to think if there's any other ways you can find me or interaction with me or content I make. That's about what I really do these days. I haven't done YouTube for a little while, so yeah, those are where to find me. Otherwise, we will have a very busy weekend ahead of us watching an incredible amount of motorsport as obviously May ramps up, and then of course we immediately appear into June where it's Le Mans season. But anyway, thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back soon.